Well, I know it's a funny subject, legacy. How many of you have a legacy, or how many of you have even thought about the word legacy in the last 20 years? But it's important, gentlemen, when you look at our lives. Every one of us have had some terrible ups and terrible downs. And I can tell you, I'm not unique, so I know I can be with you on that. It says in Proverbs, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not to your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him and he will direct our paths. He will direct our paths. How do you feel about that?
Fantastic. I'm great about it.
I see many, many, many smiles, and that makes me feel very comfortable talking to you about that. Ages 2 to 5, growing up, who did we trust? Mom and dad, our older siblings, sometimes some of our play friends, but not always. As a 5-year-old, I remember feeling so wonderful because my dad was coming home. He was a highly decorated chaplain in the Second World War, the second wave of Omaha Beach, Normandy invasion, where just literally tens of thousands, 18, 19, 20-year-olds, were slaughtered by the Germans. I couldn't wait for my dad to get home. I did have a little remembrance that when he left, I was probably 2 to 3 years old because he had just purchased a new 1941 Chevrolet Black. You remember those old cars? And my mom was out painting the white picket fence that we all had in the front yard. And I was so excited that I went over with the white brush and painted one of the fenders of the car. So even back then, as young as I was hoping he wouldn't remember when he came home. But he came home totally broken, with having lost one eye. He was highly decorated, even by the French government, for his bravery. And so that was really a moment in my life, even though I was young, that I could think about my dad and what he was meaning to my life at that time. But my father and mother have been God, and I have benefited greatly because of them. And they have helped me through highs and lows my entire life. It's hard to believe that this scripture that I just quoted was always on the refrigerator, even when I was a small boy. And I'm old enough that it was even on the icebox. And I know some of you younger people don't know what the icebox was, but remember the people driving up with their little buggies and putting the block of ice in the icebox? That's a few years ago. Real people have been always in my life, some good, some bad. I was a preacher's kid, and we had to be absolutely perfect because we ran around with people like Ed Albaniak, Gary Reed, and they couldn't do anything wrong. But boy, that preacher's kid was terrible. As a teenager, I can remember two examples that stick in my craw where people in the church came to my parents to report the fact that my girlfriend was wearing short shorts in the summertime. And how could the preacher's kid be allowed for his girlfriend? Second, I had a wonderful job delivering drugs. As you remember, the drugstores used to have the drugs delivered to your home. And I was doing that, good money for a teenager. But how could the preacher's kid every third Sunday work during services? Wow, did I set the wrong example. So I had quite a growing up experience. And then in high school, my sister was valedictorian. She was editor of the school newspaper. She did everything right. The next year I would come into class and they would say, "You're Peggy's brother?" Heavens. But I do remember my chemistry teacher. And he let me know right up front, it didn't matter what Peggy had done. I was going to earn every one of those grades myself. In other words, you're not going to ride on your sister's laurels. So, but that was the start of my career of having a chemistry teacher that personally understood me and really went out of his way to give me a strong foundation. Then I went into college, even though I wasn't prepared to go to college, to the same Christian junior college that my sister was the year ahead. So, but I didn't really want to go to college, and I told my parents I didn't want to because most of the high school guys were going to work with big salaries. They could buy a car working for places like the power companies and manufacturing and whatever, good money. Why would I want to go to college? My father said, "Well, maybe you ought to go into the service." And my mother said, "He's going to college." So I went to college. Had a very difficult time. First year in a Christian school, I helped start a jazz band off campus. But pretty soon it was known that the people doing that in a Baptist college was not the right thing to do. My first semester, I literally, my grades were terrible. Came home for Christmas, my dad said, "We've already paid for it, you're going back." And I made the honor roll the second semester. Then I went on to VMI, which is a military college, for the remaining for the undergraduate, and ended up having a good job coming out of VMI, teaching in an exclusive girls' college in White Sulphur Springs, West Virginia. And just an ideal, I was going to teach chemistry, biology, and horsemanship, being a VMI grad. But all of us that graduated from VMI back in 1960, if you were qualified, you were going into the service. So after all of the complaining that I did, and even the college couldn't believe I wasn't coming, I didn't get that assignment because the Department of Defense said, "Nope, you're going in because we need chemical engineers in the worst way." So I did not get that ideal job that I was looking forward to. In the Air Force, I was blessed, even as a second lieutenant, to be involved with the original astronauts in the space program, because at that early stage, the space program was under the Air Force. And so they were just starting up NASA. And so my job with several other junior officers, was to develop the specifications for clean rooms. Now, I know some of you know what those are, but clean rooms for manufacturing. And those, now that we formed, the three of us, are now the international standards for clean rooms, for medical devices, for pharmaceuticals, for electronics and whatever. And so that was quite an honor to have that assignment. But I remember reporting down to Warner Robins, Georgia, the first thing they said, the colonel that was in the personnel office, why the hell did they send me a second lieutenant? The job description was for a major. And I thought, here I was going to teach in this wonderful girls' school, and I come on board, and I was the greatest thing since sliced bread to be going into the Air Force, because they wanted me. And the colonel said, why did they send me a second lieutenant to fill a major's job? But that was a blessing that I didn't realize early on, that it was God who took me away from that girls' college and sent me down and really caused me as a second lieutenant to know who I was and what I was going to be in this man's Air Force. Same thing with my wife experience. My wife was in Orlando, Florida. I left the Air Force, stayed in almost 4 years active duty because I was in during the Cuban crisis, and being in Georgia, we were very close to the action of what was happening in Cuba and all the mess that you remember about the Cuban crisis. So I left the Air Force. I had many, many opportunities with large companies because I had written the standards for clean rooms. And that was an automatic, that IBM, DuPont, and those companies were looking for me to help them decipher what the federal standards were for building and operating clean rooms. So that was a blessing in itself. But I went to work with a small company, startup company, developing instrumentation for the purity of chemicals and so forth, because they had a Cessna 210. Now, I didn't have my pilot's license when I was in the Air Force, but I did get my pilot's license privately to fly. So the big come on to go to Orlando rather than going to IBM and some of the nicer jobs was on the weekends, I could use that Cessna 210 to fly back up into Georgia because Delta had the stewardess school in Atlanta. And that, as a lieutenant in the Air Force, we used to go up, a group of us would go up on the weekends to date the girls that were at the Delta school. So quite a lifestyle while I was in the Air Force. But I went to a big, large Baptist church in Orlando. And Sunday after Sunday, I would sit there and see all these lovely women coming in, because a lot of them would come down from the north to teach school, because they were coming down because there were so many aerospace engineers that they were looking for, rather than competing in New York or Boston or whatever. So you can see the background. Now, I don't know what my timing is, but Gary, you can do this if I'm still talking too long. But what we found that there's so many things that were happening in the space program, because in Orlando, we were actually doing the shots over at Cape Canaveral, which was Cape Kennedy, then Cape Canaveral, and the space shots. So I was actively involved with those, again, from the standpoint of the clean rooms, working with this entrepreneur startup company. And wonderful. But on the weekends, most of these high-paid junior engineers would just sit around and drink, water ski on the lakes in Orlando, and just a wonderful life. But I would go to church on Sunday, but I wasn't able to connect. So I finally went into the Department of Education, Christian Education, and I said to the head of that department, I would love to get to meet some of these ladies, but I can't just walk up to them in after church and say, I'm so-and-so, and what am I going to do? And he looked at me and he said, tell me your background. I gave him my background and he said, come with me. So he walked me down to the senior pastor's office and he said, here's the guy. They had been trying for 2 years to set up a young singles ministry. And so within 2 weeks, I was in front of that church announcing the fact that we were going to have a afternoon get together for the young professionals in that church. So we scheduled it, and the first time we had 7 men and over 100 women. Man, was I excited. But there was this one beautiful lady was there, and I could see the older men established with good jobs that were just hanging around her. And I thought, boy, how can I meet that lady? So sure enough, we had a trim the tree party, and I decided to go over and confront this lady. But you could go to the party in Bermudas, slacks, or gunny sacks. Now, many of you don't know what a gunny sack is, but it was the feed store. You would buy feed for the animals and so forth in a gunny sack. And so I walked over to her and I said, would you like to go to the party in a gunny sack? And her face just lit up to think that this kook is inviting her on a date to go to the party. Sure enough, I went down to the feed store, which wasn't too far from my office, and bought 2 empty feed sacks. But because my job required me on every Friday to fly to 3 different offices in Florida where we were doing consulting work, I found out that I had bad weather flying back, and it looked like I wasn't going to get there to have my first date with this lovely lady. But it turns out it was okay, except for the fact that I took those 2 gunny sacks to the apartment complex and washed them in the washing machine and then dried them. Those washing machines were never the same from that day on. Got to Jean's house. Jean didn't even know what my last name was. So she said to me when I opened the door, I don't remember your last name. So I told her. So she introduced her family. So we ended up cutting these gunny sacks, and we both had the same size. I was much smaller in this area. And so we went to the party and we were the hit of the party. So that was my introduction to this lovely lady who 56 years later is my loving wife and compatriot. Then thinking that probably wasn't going to happen that we'd get married, I took a job in Boston because the aerospace program in the Boston, the 128 Beltway, was the center of the space, early space program. So I took a job with a very wonderful company because my entrepreneur of 9 months, my business, I finally realized I really didn't know much about marketing and business. And so that was another shock to me. But I went to work for this company that taught me in 14 years everything that was the foundation for my next stage career. With that, I stayed in Boston for actually 19 years, worked and did a number of things that were complementary to high technology in many areas, not only the clean rooms, but the liquids, pure water was something that we really needed for manufacturing of all those electronic components and so forth. So setting standards for that was the foundation of this wonderful company in Boston. And then in 1983, after having left that great company, gone to work for a family company that had promised me that if I did everything that I promised, that the founder, CEO, would move up to the board and I would end up getting the job of running this company. And I thought, boy, what could I want more than having my own little company that I can grow at that point? But after 2 years, he decided he didn't want to leave the company, but I had literally turned the P&L around to the point that it was an attractive company. But he decided that it was time for me to leave, even though I had a contract, which convinced. And so he started telling all kind of lies about what a crumb I was and what I had done. So again, another setback in my career to think that everything was going wonderfully until my close friend that had promised me all of these things turned and said, no, you're not going to have my company. All the things in the contract are a lie. Luckily, his attorney, CEO's attorney, lived behind me in Lexington, Massachusetts. And this guy knew what my background was and my integrity. And so my attorney said, you can sue this guy for anything you want to and just wipe him out if you wanted to. But I thought to myself, that's the last thing I want to do, have that on my record, that I only wanted it because I wanted to destroy the company. So again, another setback. But then I got a call from a national search firm saying, we have a company in Boulder, Colorado, that's in real trouble. And they're looking for somebody with your credentials. And you can come out, you can do whatever you need to do to start this company all over. So in 1983, I came out to Boulder. I don't know that any of you will remember the company, but it was called PureCycle. And PureCycle had actually come up with a way to purify drinking water. And it was very clever, and I could see that it had technology that I could really relate to. But the technology was such that you needed to have a lot of service to make this equipment work. And so they were selling these units for about $20,000 to upscale construction companies selling beautiful homes, million-dollar homes in Boulder County. And this water purification system worked. But what they didn't do is realize that the homeowner isn't ready to maintain that super technology. And so if the wife got into the shower and was all soaked up getting ready to go to the country club for a luncheon, and the thing would automatically shut off if the water quality wasn't at a certain level, you can imagine. So they sold 200 of these units to consumers in Boulder County. And they were charging $200 a month for service. You can see quickly that the time of service they couldn't possibly offer to those 200 customers. So anyway, they had spent a lot of money. The company actually had 125 scientists and engineers, one CEO, and one bookkeeper. So you can imagine, as a startup company, that there was no foundation for that. So I was offered that package to come in and turn around. What they didn't tell me until I got here is it was about $2 million of debt on the balance sheet, and that raising money was my first job. I had never raised money because the companies I worked for were very profitable and the money was obviously there. So the combination happened that I learned very quickly that I really wasn't a startup specialist, but I did figure out that I could take part of the technology of the business, start a brand new company, and then sell off the other two pieces to make it happen. So that's what I did. And that company was very successful. We sold that one. And then I started a second technology company. here while we were early on in Boston. Now, what does that all mean? Yeah, it's been up and down. Did I plan that? Did I think of anything? Did I hit the road oftentimes and then realize I was out there by myself? But every time, God had a better plan for me. And as soon as I would wake up in each of those situations, I could quickly tell that let's get on to the next thing because there is a reason that I'm here on this earth. Had a good friend, some of you may know, Gordon McDonald, is a pastor in Lexington. He's written a number of very excellent books. Personal friend, he ended up being CEO of World Vision, so you can know the type of person he was. And then he was at Denver Seminary as a chancellor, where he had gone to get his seminary degree. Gordon said to me back in Lexington, and about the night when I was about 45 years old, "Bud, do you really think you're happy what you're doing?" And he and I were going to a conference. We had a long talk about that. And when I finished talking with him and left, I got to thinking about that. Happiness? No, I would think some of my troubles were the furthest thing from happiness. But Gordon had the ability to draw me out, to show me how God had been in my life. The point of that is that Pastor Mack, a couple of years ago, retired from Chancellor of Denver Seminary. And in his retirement, he cautioned us about who we are. Now, I see some young faces in here, so I'm really talking to his old farts about who we are and what we're doing. But what he did is he talked about who we are at our age level and where we are. So let me just quickly run through those, and I know I'm bouncing on time here. First of all, protect and nourish key relationships. Second, seek fresh ideas, keep learning and growing. Maintain health by rest, nutrition, and exercise. Regularly recalibrate expectations. I know at age 82, it takes me twice as long to get my tax documents together for someone to do it. And then when I look at it, I can't believe the money that I've spent and wasted in looking at the numbers. So recalibrating expectations is a wake-up call, if nothing else, when you're doing your taxes each year and look at where your money is actually gone. Spend, save, give by plan and principle. Reallocate work, play, learning time. Eliminate non-essential stuff, downsize. Resolve resentment. Encourage younger people. This next one is key for me. Expect obscurity. The younger generation will have the seats in the future. You are still going to be the mentor, the consultant. They are going to call on you, but don't think they are going to think you are the one making them successful. Maintain public and private worship. Cultivate a thankful spirit. Anticipate increasing amounts of loss, medical problems, and passing of friends, and build a legacy. build a legacy. That's why I started by asking you the question about your legacy. Being a native of Virginia, my teenage kids gave me this a number of years ago. And in all the business I have started, and all the times that I have been a senior executive, and I've had worldwide P&L responsibilities for very large public companies, I've always had this in my office behind my desk. I can't tell you how many times people, mostly non-Christians, that would come in for a meeting or just come in to talk to me, and the reactions that I have got. The legacy, we know this gentleman started. I don't expect any of us to have anywhere close to the legacy of George Washington. But I remember the time, one of the small companies I was helping in Boulder, the brother of the founder of the company came in, and he looked at this and he said to me, "Is that what I think it is?" I didn't want to answer because I had no idea what he was thinking. But he quickly told me that he had no idea about the impact. And within 3 or 4 weeks, that gentleman had come to Christ, and his brother, the founder of the company, thanked me graciously because he had tried to take his life several times. But the point was that those of us who are leading legacies, you may never know who you are and who they are, but it won't be difficult for you to know that God places you in different places at the right time.
Amen.
So remember what we started with Proverbs 3:5-6.
Amen.
Trust in the Lord. And I also encourage you to think about your legacy.
Amen.
Thank you.